Welcome to the Anime That Didn't Make Us, a podcast about anime that we could have been nostalgic for if not for the curse of geography. Joining us to pick an anime from when they were 8 to 10 years old, it's Marvin Lafayette.
Hello, everyone.
After he missed the, was it the Broly episode you missed?
I was heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken. Didn't get a chance to get to the cinema, only just got it on Blu-ray the other day, listened to the ep and was like, I wish I was there.
Well, you've seen it now.
See, I was a pro on that episode. These guys bring up fake facts, remember that?
I was random things
online.
I was cringing away listening. I was like, I can dispute this.
Well, instead of those fake facts are actually real facts. Lewis did some extra research after the fact.
I was right all along, though, wasn't I?
I can't remember.
I think so.
Righty-ho. So, as I'm the oldest still the only person from Generation X, it's still talking to the millennials here on the anime that didn't make us. I picked from 1985, High School Kim and Gumi. First published in 1982 in the pages of Shonen Jump, High School Kim and Gumi is a comedy manga by Motoei Shinzawa that was a sequel to the series' third year Kim and Gumi. The series follows the antics of the Funny Face Club, five fellas with funny fizzogs, who battle against society's demands to be normal and fit in.
Wait there. Fizzog. I gather it means a face.
Yes.
But did you make that word up?
No.
Did you put that in there?
I put that in there, but I didn't make the word up.
Oh.
No, it's apparently the blurb is written by Jay-Z.
I think it means face. I've always had it referred to as face. I could be wrong.
I hope so.
Yes. It's always the worry.
Gaelic for penis.
You pick up words from your parents and then you never think, were my parents using that word correctly?
Using them as safe words.
So, their worldview attracts the attentions of transfer student Kawayui, who falls for their leader Ichido Rei, dragging her new friend Uruchi along with her. A belated sequel to the manga followed in 2000, with the most recent iteration being 2001's Flash Kim and Gumi. The anime adaptation was produced in 1985 for Fuji TV by Gallup and Studio Comet. It ran for 86 episodes and had a single movie tie-in. Ooh. So, this airs Saturday, October the 12th, 1985. What was I watching instead of this? You two could not watch these things because you were not alive.
Well, I would have been alive, surely.
And I like reruns.
85? Were you alive in 85?
Yes. I was alive in 85. I was probably a year and a bit old.
Well, okay. Well, there you go. You may have watched none of these things. Excuse me. So, Saturday morning, you could watch What a Mess, the animated adaptation of the Frank Muir, and I can't remember the artist's books. Do you ever read What a Mess as kids?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
Really, it's like a really dirty dog. But the appeal of the picture books was there was always like loads of little things going on in the background which had nothing to do with the main story. Like loads of tiny weird people living in the back garden of this, where this dog lived. Then there was Children of Fire Mountain, which I seem to remember hating. it's 1900 and Sir Charles Pemberton and his granddaughter arrive in New Zealand. Yeah, that sounds exactly the sort of thing I did not like. Some live action children's drama set in the past. Then it was Saturday Superstore. This is presented by Mike Reed, Keith Chegwin, Sarah Green, and Vicky Licorice. And their guests are Patrick Moore.
Sir Patrick Moore?
Was he Sir at this point?
He was
point?
A Sir, isn't he?
I don't think he was a Sir at that point.
No.
Well, he should have been.
But I'm surprised that Keith Chegwin was presenting stuff when I was 1 year old. I always remember him from sort of 90s onwards.
Oh, no, he was even further back.
Oh, he's a long runner.
He was on
Tiz Wars, isn't it?
No, not Tiz was. He was on the BBC. Noel Edmonds Swap Shop.
Oh, okay.
Swap Shop, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, and he'd have Cheggers Plays Pop as well. It was his own program. Which is like a kids' TV, well, obviously it's a kids' TV program. It's a kids' quiz show about pop music. I think they might have had one, a band on each episode as well. It had a really great, absolute cracking theme tune, so. If you want to hear a good theme tune, check
what
it out.
What'd it sound like? Can you do it?
Jags plays pop, pop, pop. Jags plays pop.
What like was that. The Swap Shop theme?
Swap Shop theme. I can't remember what that was.
Oh.
The Swap Shop is only vaguely in my memories. I remember there was like plush toy dinosaurs around the set and Cheggers was always like on the,
on drugs.
He may well have been on the booze. But no, he was always on like the outside broadcast bit of it. Similar, that's why they've got him in to do the same role on The Big Breakfast in the 90s. Anyway, you've also got Shakin' Stevens, the Thompson Twins, Roger Daltrey, B.A. Robertson, and Tim Rice. To which I was going through this list, my notes say, I thought this was a fucking kids show.
But the parents would have been watching, presumably.
Yeah, it just appears to be people who Mike Reed might know who are on the show. Saturday evening entertainment, you had the Tripods, which was a sci-fi. It's like the War of the Worlds, but based on like some what would be called young adult novels today. I used to find this incredibly scary, so I don't think I've ever seen any of it.
The Tripods. Oh. Shock, a tripod came up. BBC. I can see why you'd be scared of this.
It's also got like a post-apocalyptic thing and it's like teenagers being enslaved by the, yeah, it's very young adult. Then we got Terry and June, which would not be called young adult. That is the sitcom with Terry Scott and June Whitfield.
Probably the first thing that I properly remember off of this list, actually.
Yeah. The theme tune is a library theme tune, so you'll occasionally hear it in other things, including anime. Noel Edmonds' Late Late Breakfast Show. This was a year, just over a year before he kills a person on the show.
What? Did somebody die?
Yes. They used to do this thing where members of the general public would do a stunt.
God.
Madness.
And what stunt did they try to do?
I can't remember. I don't know whether we were watching it that evening.
That was a much more diplomatic question than I was going to go for, which was, how did they die?
Well, apparently, I found the article, but just somebody fell 120 feet?
Yes.
No.
Starring Noel Edmonds and Mike Smith in this week's show, music from special guests Elton John and Arcadia, featuring Simon Le Bon and Nick Rhodes.
Ooh.
Give It a Whirl, that's the feature, I think. Presents Ski Jumping with a Difference. And the Hit Squad and the Golden Egg Awards have a political theme. Then we've got, previously mentioned on this podcast, Bob's Full House. This is... Bob Monkhouse is... It's like a bingo-themed quiz. Then there was an episode of Juliet Bravo called The Cut. I would have been incredibly bored if and when my parents were watching this. They may have switched over to ITV or something. But we would have watched, finally, probably the last thing I was allowed to watch before I had to go to bed, The Paul Daniels Magic Show.
Loved by everyone.
Featuring a special guest appearance by Penelope Keith.
He's dead now, isn't he, Paul Daniels?
He is, yes. He travels to Bath, apparently. I didn't realise this was went on tour. But the good thing about this show was he'd always have like guests, like a guest magician, and then also like guest variety performers, like the stuff you'd now see on Britain's Got Talent. Because essentially that is a variety show in disguise, isn't it? Because they get on people who aren't even from Britain just because they know they're good at doing a particular variety thing. And there's no other place to put them.
Did Paul Daniels one have crap people as well? Or
No. They did, tended not to deliberately put crap people on TV at this point.
That would have been strange to see when, like, then somebody useless on TV singing.
Yes, it would be like something. It would be. It would occasionally happen, and it would be like a national embarrassment for them. I.e., like somebody. The typical thing would be somebody on Top of the Pops, and the backing track broke down, and the person didn't know what to do.
Oh, those were the days.
Yeah. Now they put deliberately put terrible people on TV. There was nothing on BBC Two that I would have watched. The UK number one was Jennifer Rush with The Power of Love.
The Power of Love. That one?
No.
No.
Oh.
There's a lot.
It's the one. Isn't it the one that's a, cause I'm your lady. And
the
you
power
are
of love.
Is it this side of the year? There's like multiple songs called Power of Love in the chart.
Get sent from above.
That's Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Yeah, that's way off.
Yes.
What? I didn't...
That's from 84.
See, I was ahead of the curve. No, I don't know this one.
No, I
only
can't
one Power of Love in my vicinity.
Then, let's talk about the actual anime. This is episode 1 of High School Kim and Gumi. I Love Strange Faces, Come Forth, Kim and Flash. Which, the way the thing was titled, I thought, oh, it's going to be like two stories. But no, it does that. It is actually just one flowing story throughout. The episode, this is brought to us, the director is Hiroshi Fukutome, who we know on this podcast from Battle Angel Alita OVAs and Flint the Time Detective.
Woo! Famous.
The screenplay is by Takao Koyama, who wrote on Dragon Ball Z, Slayers, and most things in the 1990s. The storyboard is also by Fukutome, as he's also the episode director. The character designer is Hiroshi Kanizawa, and there was not much more else of interest, character design-wise, in their credits. So, here we go. High School, Kim and Gumi, episode 1. This is a fan sub we're watching. I've got 2 fan subs of this first episode. I don't know which one's the better one. This, the one we watched is the first one produced from many, many moons ago, I think. And it's good, but there's like, they try and do, translate some of the pun names, but then at some points they just give up. With other ones, I still don't know what the pun, the teacher's name is. Cause essentially every single character's name is a pun. We open with the theme tune, which is pretty memorable, and it's by, I can't remember the group, it's like a super group of, like, teenage idols, which were, like, the first big one of those, their kind, the Onyanko Club.
Hmm. Are they still going now? Are they middle-aged?
That is a good, well, we'll get together. We'll get to that when we talk about the actress who plays the female lead. Because I went to her Twitter feed, and she's still doing it, middle-aged. That is for sure. No, they were active 85 to 87, and there was a 2002 record and a 2010 commercial.
Okay.
So, yeah, their fame, like, coincides exactly with when this was running.
Where are they now, I wonder?
So, as I mentioned, yes, I would say the main character of this show, but at least based on the first episode, is Kawai Yui, the transfer student who arrives at the start of the episode. Yeah. Who everybody, she's introduced to the class, and because her name sounds like, is like, that's, or so cute or something, or she's cute,
kawaii.
Yes. Is that the boys just turn into, like, animals.
I was floored, because the whole tone of the episode is set up, and you think, all right, this is going to be, you know, camp, kitschy, funny sort of thing, and then, you know, catchy intro. And then the first note that I've got from when she walks into the classroom is, these boys are thirsty. They're falling all over them. So, I mean, what was it? One of them says, let me be the caramel on your tongue or something. I was like, jeez. Yes.
Let me be the caramel of your mouth. Yes.
I don't remember seeing that line.
And so she shouts at them, which gets them all to behave. Because when she first shows up, Urachi's like, oh, I don't like the look of this girl. But then when she puts her foot down that they get the boy's bad behavior, she's like, I could be friends with her. Come and sit next to me. This table's free. I'll have to go back and see whether that table was free before she shouts it.
I think it is.
She didn't just shout somebody out of their chair.
What's her name again?
Urachi is the other girl, yes.
Right.
The other thing we strike.
What's that pun on?
Is that Urusai?
Something similar to that, yeah. I can't remember what it was. I didn't write down all the puns. But the thing you notice in the class is there's a lot of people in the class. Also, apparently, this is like the 10th class of this year. So there's apparently loads of classes throughout each year.
You know what that school needs? It needs a battle royale. Thin the herd a bit.
Which I believe is important. And you also, lots of people in the class have got faces. They're not like just generic person number, two. Because by the time you got to the end of the episode, okay, let's introduce our main characters. Because yes, they wonder if there's interest. She's wondering if there's interesting people in the class, and Urachi says, "Well, you might say that, but they're not here yet." And then we see them walking down the corridor in shadow. The Funny Face Club. Ichido Ray. I think his pun is mistranslated. I think it's supposed to be like no eyebrows or something. Ritsu Go, whose thing is big eyes. Shusei Kiyoshi is like big teeth, but he's like basically drawn like an incredibly racist stereotype of a Japanese person.
Yeah.
You've got Daimajin, he's the one who's got the really big wide mouth. And also, I don't know if it's just him or all of them can do it, but he's the first one we see, like, break with reality.
Yeah, ripping through the pages of the manga in the anime.
Yeah. And then finally, we've got Monohoshi Dai, small mouth Dai. He's, like, got a very tiny mouth and a girly face. And these are played by... Ray is played by Shigeru Chiba. Who I assume is going to show up in every single thing I pick from the 80s. We've got Go is played by Tesho Genda. He's currently Kaido in One Piece. He's Metal Knight in One Punch Man. And he was Rei in Urusei Yatsura. See, Shigeru Chiba is also in Urusei Yatsura as Megane. Kiyoshi is Issei Futamata, who was Chibi in Urusei Yatsura. And he's, Miki Yasu Shinshi from Pat Labor. He's like the one guy in the team who's married and constantly worrying about his wife. Jin is played by Naoki Tatsuta, who is currently Capone Beige in, One Piece, and he's Oolong from Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
Monohoshi Dai is the, late Kaneto Shiozawa, who was Rei in Fist of the North Star.
Decent squad. Bet they had some fun in the voiceover room.
Well, that's the thing. We've got Kawayui. Is played by, Miki Takahashi. She was also Romy in the Japanese dub of Willy Fogg. According to her Wikipedia, she basically became Kawayui when she was in this role and fell in love with the fictional character Ichido Ray.
Right.
If you look at our Twitter, at 57 years old, she's still dressing up in a school uniform and doing Kim and Gumi related stuff and appearances.
is it that big a deal? Like, is she, like, clasping onto this dream long gone?
Well, there's both people are showing up for it, so good on her.
People are showing up. That might just be a cleverly shot photograph. There's
possibly,
like four people in the crowd.
So she retired when she got married after this, but then she reappeared in the 90s and started her own independent office in 98.
Oh, that's cool.
And Urushi is Naoko Matsue, who is best known as Sonoko in Detective Conan. Pretty much a similar role to this of the best friend of the female lead.
Did we get as far as seeing her?
I can't remember if she's in the... I don't think she's in the film, is she? She's like the rich best friend of Rand's. She's like in most of the show, but may not have been in the one film we watched.
Possibly not. Or the one episode. Is she in the first episode? Because we did watch...
She
must
might
be.
Yeah. I can't remember, though. She's much more entwined in the plot as things go along.
Yeah, yeah.
These lads roll up. Well, first of all, they introduce themselves to the audience in the corridor by pulling out a banner. They show themselves, "We are the legends who bring laughter to the downhearted." And they show up late for class, so the teacher throws a vase in Ray's face.
Best moment of the episode.
And they introduce themselves to the class, well, basically to Kawaii, because clearly everybody in the class already knows who they are. But they go through...
But they love the act, like the laughter track that they have here. The laughter had me laughing more than the content they were laughing at.
It was brilliant. The whole time, all I could think of was the Ginyu Force. It was fantastic. when they like, "Oh, that pose wasn't right," or "Maybe I should try this," like, direct link.
Yes. And everyone's, Kawaii is like, "I can't believe they're our age." And then Yurichi points out they're not. It took them 3 times before they could get into high school.
Which one's really hairy? There's one where, like, you see his arms, he's got really hairy arms.
I would assume it'd be Gyo, because he's, like, got the big eyebrows. But I could be wrong. It might also be Savage Jin. they just basically annoy the teacher for probably a good 5 minutes, and they explain the reason they laugh when people are mocking them is because they have turned it back on them. If they were to cry, what would be the purpose? They've got to make the best of their funny faces, and society wants you to be normal, and so we're going to fight back against it by being as abnormal an individual as possible. And Kawaii thinks this is great. And then we get that weird conversation when the bell rings. It's such nice weather. Shall we go to the bathroom together? You went to the bathroom during class. But then immediately, once he sees that the lads are up to something, she's like, "Let's follow them instead." "I thought you wanted to go to the bathroom." And so what's happened is Ray has nicked the other lad's food and run off with it. Three of them are chasing after him, but of the aforementioned breaking of the fourth wall, tearing through the wall of the school comes Jin, stopping him and recovering the food. Or does he swallow it all in one go when he grabs? They grab them.
I think he yoinks it. Yeah.
And they tie him up, and then they're going to punish him by dragging him around the school on a child's tricycle. And as they're doing this, the girls run into another 5 weirdos. Can't remember what. They're like the...
This is the maths club. Is this the maths club one?
They're the Honegume. I assume they're like the study club or something. Aim for university is their motto, and the words sexy, girl, and love are not in their vocabulary, even though their faces say something entirely different when they first lay eyes on Kawaii. Now, this is the gimmick, I believe, of the entire show, is that this school is full of groups of 5 male weirdos.
I don't want to watch this show again, but I would like to see a picture of each with a short, snappy description
of
what they are, what they do. That would be fine.
A squad-based RPG.
Yes. XCOM, but with in a high school.
Because while they're dragging him around, they run into another five group of weirdos who are like the, we briefly see
the
them.
Antagonists.
The modeling. They're like the handsome boy club. but before they get to act, we then get to see the punishment they, eke out on Ray, and the girls join in dragging him around. Just basically dragging him around school, on the bike, on his head, and then finally hurling him into a tree. then after school, the girls start getting bothered by the handsome club, who explain that they're models and they're stupid, but it doesn't matter because we're good looking and we get all the women. It doesn't matter that we're idiots. But Kawaii is not having any of it, and they like, then who do you think's attractive? And then she, just as she's about to answer, the Kim and Gumi clump come out and she points at them and says, those are the sort of guys I find attractive. Yeah, and they're not having any of it. They grab her again, and so it's up to the Kim and Gumi to teach them a lesson by, first of all, doing another lengthy speech. Also, Ray breaks the laws of gravity.
As he keeps... Yeah.
What?
He just floats. Floats in midair. It's like, yes. Can you? It's almost like the genie in Aladdin. It's like, yeah. Can your friends do this?
and then they take care of them by, the weather's gradually getting worse and worse. They do the Kimon Flash, which involves them forming like the shape of like a devil's face out of their bodies, which is able to summon lightning, which doesn't affect them, but everybody else gets electrocuted, including the two girls.
I think the note that I put down for that moment just simply says Demon Face Voltron.
Yeah, it's definitely a reference to something, because I've definitely seen, like, the bit where they get the screen splits and all their five heads are together. I feel like I've seen that before, but it's probably also referencing something and not the actual thing that it's referencing.
It's way more summary.
Oh, you're turning into a robot, Anthony.
Yeah.
You're turning into a robot.
One eternity later.
Right, okay, so where were we? Not being able to identify what on earth it was parodying.
Yeah, and I was saying your summary makes it sound sillier than when I was watching it, because I totally forgot about the flying, the crazy lightning, and then hearing it back, I'm like, God, this show was silly.
It is a silly show.
Extra silly.
Now, I've seen of this before, I've seen this episode... because I downloaded it probably close to 15 years ago at this point, or whenever it first was fansubbed. I've seen the movie. I think there's like only three episodes available fansubbed, which means some of the characters in the movie that it expects you to know who they are, you don't have a chance of knowing who they are. But I will say the movie feels like a better version of this, and is a different director doing the movie.
Does it start with like this kind of opening, or is it just like kind of chucks you in?
I think it chucks you in, but also it's separate. I think it's like 10-minute chunks to tell each story. It's like a compilation type. It's a compilation thing of things which weren't ever made in the first place. And it frustrates you in that you're like, oh, these are great characters I want to know more about. Oh, I can't. whereas I feel like this could have benefited with that writing of like, let's take all this down and crunch it into 10 minutes. And maybe, I guess they're supposed to like a mirror of like the introduction that the gang do and the introduction that their rivals do at the end. That does make a bit, I think they just explain themselves too many times in the first episode. It feels like, okay, we've got it after the first explanation of what your deal is. You'd have to do it again. And which is a good thing, they don't do it again. And the tease of the movie, watching the movie, is this show has so many characters. It's crazy. And you get an idea of that watching this first episode, because you like see glimpses of teachers who are clearly characters. You don't know anything about them yet, but it's clearly they've got roles to play. Later on. But I would have probably watched it, and it's got a really good theme tune. I really like the theme tune. I like the relationship. I like the Kawaii Yui character being like totally like, I think the thing is she struggles to tell Ray that she's into him, but it's like you know from the theme tune going in, it's like, oh right, it's about this pink haired girl who's in love with this real weirdo. how about yourselves?
Go on, Marv. Your first time on.
Yeah. Well, like partway through it, maybe not as far as halfway through, but partway through it, I was like, I can see what they're doing with the type of humor that they've got. And I'm like, yeah, there's specific moments that really made me laugh, but I'm like, this type of humor, I probably wouldn't have watched the show. And then you get to the end part with the showdown with the handsome boy group. And, you get the big speech about, you know, personality overlooks and having pride in yourself and valuing what makes you special. And I'm like, this show is fantastic. Like, I love what it stands for. And I think kids watching it would have had, you know, a great message to take away from it. So I really respect it for that. So I'm 50-50. Like, in, like, the type of show that it is, isn't the type of show that I probably would have watched, but it's interesting enough that I would be like, yeah, let's see where this goes.
Yeah, whereas Anthony clearly didn't like it, but he seems to like it more than I described it to him.
No, I like the... I don't know whether I'd do it. I certainly wouldn't watch it now.
But you can see why I was kicking myself.
Even as a kid.
I didn't pick it. I should have picked it the week you did Ping Pong Club. That was the thing.
Yeah, it would have been a good mix, because they're similar in ways. Yes. I prefer Ping Pong Club to this.
Well, that's because you're a crass human being.
Though I do like the whole... that kid tearing the walls. I like the kind of slapstick Three Stooge thing of them kind of stopping in the edge of the corridor and like clattering into each other. But other than that, yeah, I don't think even as a kid, I don't think I would have got very little from it as a kid. There's nothing appealing for me. Even my childhood self wouldn't have been interested in this.
apparently this had loads of theme tunes. But I'm only familiar with the first one, as I said, because nobody's fans of the other episodes. Now, this is one which did air in France, so this is one that our friend Ivan knows all about.
Oh.
Also, I did buy a t-shirt of them from the Uniqlo t-shirts from last year, the Shonen Jump ones. So I've got a t-shirt with the five lads' faces on the front.
That's pretty good.
Rightio, now it's time to move on and find out what Marvin picked, even though you, dear listener, know because it's in the episode title. What did you pick, Marv?
I picked a show called DNA 2.
DNA Squared.
I thought it was DNA Squared.
It is, yes. I just didn't superscript it in my document.
Well, no, I looked at it and I was hoping that someone would say the name of the show at some point, and I'm like, I'm sure it's meant to be Squared because it's a little too... DNA Squared.
Right, DNA Squared is based on the science fiction rom-com manga by Masakazu Katsura. It ran in Shonen Jump from 1993 to 1994. In 94, it got this anime adaptation for Nippon TV, produced by Madhouse and Studio Deen, where it ran for 12 initial episodes before returning three times in 95 for single OVA episodes in February, April, and June. My guess is because when they started it, the comic hadn't finished. And when they finished it, the comic hadn't finished, even though it probably finished when it aired. And so I'm going to guess that it does not have an ending until it's got those OVA episodes. The story itself follows Karin Aoi, a time-traveling DNA operator tasked with correcting the DNA of the original Mega Playboy, Junta Momonari, before he can set that had been set off, I missed a word out there, set off the chain of events that have led to the future being plagued by his amorous descendants. And the original air date for this was Friday, October the 7th, 1994, when I would have been 19 years old. How old were you, Bav?
I was 10 and a bit. And 10 and 2 months.
Anthony?
7? Yeah, about 7 or 8, maybe.
Do you know when
or 7 you, going on 8.
Do you know when your birthday is?
I don't know. 87. It's 87.
Okay. What we could have been watching on this Friday. Well, in the morning, if some reason you... Was it be half term, maybe? No, October 7th, which shouldn't be. But anyway, they had Kids Kilroy on, apparently. but in the afternoon, the actual kids' TV programs, you had Popeye. You had TVK with Tony Anstis and Chris Jarvis. This week, Peter Simon and the team explain why men wear ties.
Oh, wow.
It was a different time.
Then it was the new Yogi Bear show. And then, actually, I'm going to guess TVK wasn't with Toby Anstis and Chris Jarvis. I bet they were just in the broom cupboard or whatever. Mm. Anyway, then 4:10, Get Your Own Back. Now that I do remember, even at 19 years old.
Yeah, I do. I remember it vaguely.
The game show that gives grown-ups a hard time with Dave Benson Phillips.
Did you say you only remember that vaguely?
Yeah, I remember that I used to watch it, but I don't remember much about it now. I haven't thought about it for
ages.
It's
like I used to watch teachers and parents time. Gunged and...
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to watch that all the time.
It ran for 13 years.
See? Jeez. It's insane. He came to my university, I think. Dave Benson Phillips. Not as a student, but, you know, them stupid yes. nights where they get paid £1,000 to stand on stage and gunge people. That's kind of the thing. Big crowd.
Then Record Breakers was still going. Cheryl Baker and Chris Akabusi era.
What did Chris Akabusi do again? He did like a... Rah, rah, rah. What was this thing he did? He did this thing where he rolled his hand, didn't he? Chris Akabusi. He did this chant. I've got a video here and everything. All right, that's what he used to say. Okay. He used to like spin his hand around and he used to repeat it. How could you not remember that?
I remember him and his name. I just don't remember his gimmick. In my head, because you say he spins his hands around when he does it, I've got this image of Jack from Tekken. Just furiously spinning his hands on the ends of his arms.
No. It's like I don't know how you would kind of describe as... Just Google it after the ep. You'll know exactly what I mean.
Download your Chris Akabusi DLC for Tekken as well.
Yeah, new skin for Jack.
They got news round, of course, and Grange Hill, where Jessica has mixed feelings about the investigation of the incident at the drama group. Then, in the evening, we had Wipeout. This is the Paul Daniels era of Wipeout, not the Bob Monkhouse era.
Good times.
And there's something called Fat Man in France. I have no recollection of that at all.
I wish I did.
Keeping Up Appearances.
Brilliant show.
Brilliant. Yes.
When buying property, Hyacinth finds it hard to think small as Richard feared.
Richard?
And then you had Big Break. Well, there you go. That's the, at least, well, was he, was he convicted? He was just accused, wasn't he, Jim Davison?
I don't know.
I didn't remember this at all, but I did look it up. At 9:30, there was Out of This World. Sue Cook presents a special investigation of the paranormal. featuring four stories involving apparitions, poltergeists, and psychic experiences. I'm not saying watch the show, but I do recommend looking it up on YouTube and at least watching the introductions, because it is the most parochial British attempt to cash in on the X-Files.
Sounds great.
On BBC Two, in the morning, you could watch Little Bits, which, as we mentioned before, is anime. Mr. Ben, which is not, The Adventures of Buzzy Bee and Friends. If you were so young or off sick, you could watch The Tent Stop on Playdays and Fireman Sam. And then at 6 o'clock, you'd got all your parents' favourites, put on TV again for you to watch. Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons.
Now we're talking.
Randall and Hopkirk Deceased.
Oh, I watched that.
Which, the original, or this is the original, not the Vic and Bob one?
I watched the original.
Okay.
I watched more of the original than the Vic and Bob one, to be honest.
I'm in the same, yes.
Yeah.
I don't think I saw any of the Vic and Bob one. The Ozone, that was like the BBC Two pop music news program. Red Dwarf 6.
There you go.
And Knowing Great Me, series. Knowing You with Alan Partridge.
Aha! See, I recognise all of this stuff.
Well, yeah.
All, you won't more than when this. It comes to mine.
I know, which was later.
Yeah. Maybe I'm older than I thought.
And the UK number one was Wigfield and Saturday Night.
See, I can't believe that that came out when I was 10. That's mad. I remember singing along to that for years. It feels like it came out when I was like 15 or something.
Well, if you've got that much practice, years of singing along to it, you should sing us a little line now. You've got the practice.
I'll sing the most nonsense part of the bridge, the Saturday night, da 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 dee da 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 da. Pretty baby.
Yeah, baby.
So, episode one of DNA Squared is The Girl from the Future, Karin. It is directed by Junichi Sakata, who clearly loved DNA because he would also do Geobreeders. The screenplay is by Tatsuhiko Urahata, who most recently was writing Suradure Children, and we've encountered them writing Cardfight Vanguard. The storyboard is by Hiroshi Fukutomi, who would also direct Lock the Superman, or had directed Lock the Superman. Episode director is Shigeru Ueda, who directed the TV show Elemental Gellard, which I always wanted to call Elemental Gerald whenever I saw it. The animation director is Masaru Kitao, who would I think most famously work on Death Note. I think did the character designs on that. But the character designs here are by probably the biggest name on the staff is, well, because of later stuff, Kumiko Takahashi, who would go on to do the character designs for Cardcaptor Sakura and many other things, including Oran High School Host Club. And Marv, tell us what happens in this very first episode of DNA Squared.
Well, you start off, as you said, following Karin. She's just about to start her DNA time travel mission, making sure she's got all her bits and bobs with her. Almost forgets her all-important bullet, which we'll come back to. And then she shoots off to the past to stop the Mega Playboy. And then the brilliant, brilliant intro comes on. I really, really like the intro. The character designs, the art style, it was all fantastic.
In the intro.
Yeah, obviously the artwork wasn't quite as good in the episode, but still very good. But all the artwork in the intro and the stinger, the commercial catch, break stinger.
Yeah.
Really, really good. So you come back after the, intro, and you're following Junta, who's on a date with, what was her name again?
Tomoko?
Tomoko, thank you. So he's sat down, she's in the shower, and he's trying desperately not to throw up. She asks him to pass a towel, And she gets out naked, grabs a towel, starts flirting with him, and you learn that he has a female allergy. So instead of the typical anime trope of getting aroused and getting a violent nosebleed, he does the Stan from South Park thing of whenever he's around someone that arouses him, he throws up all over himself. So she starts thinking that he's not into her. He has to kind of explain himself, and you find out naturally that he's just terrible with women because of this condition that he has. He's kind of low on self-confidence because of it and everything. And the date kind of fizzles out. Then you kind of cut back to Karen, and she's on the hunt for him in his time frame now. She's scanning for him. She sees him, and because obviously in her time, he's the mega playboy, she's like, this can't be him. The data matches up, but I need to sort of make sure. So she stalks him for a little bit, and then ends up with tracking him with a tracking device, and ends up with a cafe with him, and starts sort of asking him questions, playfully sort of bantering around, asking why everyone around them is staring at her, and he's kind of like, because you look like you're dressed from the future. And yeah, as soon as she asks him his name, and he says it's Junta, she shoots him in the chest, and everyone in the cafe goes insane, starts, you know, calling police and ambulance and everything. And it turns out that the bullet was the DNA control medicine, which was supposed to take away Junta's playboy tendencies and make him just a normal member of society to stop the overpopulation apocalypse in the future. Because she explained before she shot him that in the future, the mega playboy in his timeline sired 100 babies with 100 women who all got the playboy gene, all grew up, all were male, and all grew up to sire 100 children of their own, and so on and so forth, until I think it's 300 years later in her time, the world is a wasteland because of overpopulation. Oh dear. So yeah, he recovers from the gunshot and sort of wanders off, and you find, I think he, I can't remember if he goes back to school before or after the gunshot, but you find out that Tomoko was leading him on because she just wanted to make her boyfriend Ryuji jealous, because Ryuji is a playboy, maybe not mega playboy level, but he's got a few girls on the go.
And, oh, he's horrible. He's a nasty bugger.
He's just the worst.
Yeah. That's before he speaks to Karen, because that's the lead up to the episode break. And then it's like, oh, because now he feels like, Tomoko was just using him to make this other guy jealous, that he's then more inclined to go and speak to this woman who's wearing, like, really weird battle armor.
Yeah, so he finds that out. It's all a bit sad, really. I felt heartbroken for the poor guy. But I feel like I'm missing a hell of a lot now in the later part of the episode.
Well, if you see, the boss gets in contact with her after she's shot him.
Ah, yes. And explains how badly she messed up. Because she's took the wrong bullet back to the past with her. She's marked the correct bullet with a red line so that she wouldn't forget it. And she actually accidentally took, if I'm remembering right, the bullet that she was going to shoot her future husband with to make him the perfect husband.
Yes. Yes, because when she was talking to our hero, she explained the plan she'd got for the rest of her life. Yeah, so she's accidentally created the mega playboy.
Cause I think that was one of my favorite jokes. She's like asking his blood type for to confirm, and he thinks she's asking because she's trying to find the perfect husband. I like him.
Yeah, as a protagonist, he's kind of lovable.
I wonder if she's going to turn out to be a descendant of his. I just want to drop it out there, because she could, in theory, be one of his thing.
Bloodline.
Yeah. I mean, I guess not because she's not a mega playgirl, but...
No, I'm sure they wouldn't do that because of the DNA. They know all about the DNA as the show to the point.
True, but she could have been given alternate DNA when she was born.
Anyway, it ends with him going back to Tomoko's house.
Yes, he goes back to Tomoko's house. She's distraught. He's on his way upstairs. Ryuji's on the phone saying that he wants to come over and make it up to her, and then you hear one of his many other women in the background saying, hang up and come back and play with me. She tosses her phone across the room and bursts into tears. Junta, at the moment that he's about to, try and overcome his vomit allergy and talk to her, the bullet kicks in and he has a Sailor Moon magical girl transformation into the Mega Playboy. And kind of, it reminded me of Yu-Gi-Oh, where you've got the tiny little baby Yu-Gi, and then all of a sudden he's like 10 years older with this chiseled chin. And just this endless monologue that Tomoko has where she's like, I feel like I want to fall into him, and I just feel myself falling more and more in love with him. Nothing else matters anymore. What's wrong with me? Oh, dear. And I think the cliffhanger of the episode is... Karen obviously trying to desperately correct her mistake, and Ryuji about to get upstairs and bust in on this new DNA love fest.
There's another character you're getting introduced earlier to who's must be like a family friend or something who you can talk to without being sick, and kind of like got this kind of like a little bit of a hope that he likes her, and he says, oh, well, I don't get sick around you because you're not a real girl. And she's annoyed, and I hope she's a recurring character. Presumably she would be.
Yeah. She is. Amy. Yes, she is, definitely.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot she was in it, so I forgot to write her down. But I believe she is, like, the third main lead of the show.
Good.
That's good.
But she's not in this episode much.
Just the one scene, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Watching this, I was like, had he only heard of DNA at 30 years old? Because the amount of times the word DNA is said throughout the episode is crazy.
It's hilarious. While I was watching it, it was like power levels in Dragon Ball Z or darkness in Kingdom Hearts. They're like, you could not possibly ever leave me, Tomoko, because my DNA is so strong and our DNA wants to be together. As he's walking up the stairs trying to confront her at the end of the episode, he's like, could it be she's found a man with better DNA than mine?
I've got a science question with DNA. This is going to sound, if I'm like way off, it's going to sound super silly. DNA is in our blood, yes?
It's in everything.
Right, but like, as a human, as a human, what? If I was to have a full blood transfusion, right?
It's in your cells.
I would then not acquire someone's DNA.
No, because it's in your cells, not in the blood.
But them cells are kind of powered and, like, essentially fed by blood, aren't they?
I don't think there is any DNA in blood.
Right, okay.
If I remember correctly.
Because in the films, when they zoom in on blood cells, you see the DNA
like,
twirls.
Not like a normal cell.
They're like platelets, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, watch Cells at Work to figure all this out.
Oh, really? Really? Okay, then.
Educational anime.
Yeah. That was the weirdest thing to take away from this show.
It is. Because it has no bearing on this at all.
It doesn't.
So, Marv, would you have watched this when you were 10?
I probably would have, because as you know from the last time that I was on, I did love Tenchi Muyo back then, so this sort of romantic intrigue sort of thing, it might have held my attention. It was funny enough and sort of well animated enough that I would have maybe stuck it out and seen what happened, and I think looking at it, it was what, 12 episodes and 3 OVAs?
Yes.
So it wouldn't have been a big ask for me to finish it. So, yeah, I would have watched this. Might not have been top of the list, though.
How about you, Anthony?
No! not when I was 10. Like, as an adult now, I enjoyed it. I remember when you mentioned the premise initially, I thought, oh, it's going to be for creeps. But it hasn't been that.
I think it might be.
Really? It hasn't felt that bad yet. But that's kind of romance stuff. And
all
that
the crotch
kind of
shots just
applied.
Went completely over you.
Actually, yeah, the opening scene where Tomoko was in the shower, if I'd have been watching that when I was 10,
and a bit later when she's in her leotard stretching out and the camera's pointed straight at her crotch.
I thought it was about me mum. But yeah, I suppose there's a lot of that, and I wouldn't have been allowed probably to watch that. Actually, I don't know, because my mum might have been like, well, it's just a cartoon, it's fine. But I would not have liked this when I was 10, but I think I do kind of like it now. So, I've got, that's me.
Yeah, this aired, yeah, so it aired at, on, at 5:30.
At early.
In the afternoon.
At early for this. God. Marv needs to watch Ping Pong Club, just that one episode, which is currently winning as the most adult one we've kind of
yes,
watched.
You shouldn't have been watching definitely. That because it was that was post the watershed.
Yeah. You see a penis in the first like 30 seconds,
well,
maybe.
Yeah,
less.
That was Shin-chan. You to see that.
But yeah, that's a comedy penis. This is a lot. This is a guy's ball bag, and it's like it's slightly detailed. Not like a Shin-chan one.
They start in as they mean to go on. This was their generation's Game of Thrones.
Yeah, anyway, I would say this does not live up to that first shot in the opening of Karen. It's like, if you go in watching that, it's like, oh no, this is a very different show.
I really like her as a character, though. I think she's...
I do, I just wish she was a different show, maybe. A different plot. Because it is just like a harem comedy.
Mm.
I mean, it's not clear that it is yet, but you can kind of tell by like, oh, there's that other girl character, and then the next episode preview, there's another girl character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think I'd have watched it at the time, or watched it if I was 10, or watched it now.
Fair one. It's funny that you were on the Tenchi episode, Marvin, and Karen's kind of hood thing is like the Ayaka hood.
Yeah, I did think that.
But it's Karen is a little bit more advanced, I think. She can make it hard, she can make it soft. Yes,
I was going to say.
Quite cool, actually.
I quite like those sci-fi designs from... Katsuhara. I don't necessarily like these girl designs in this section of his career. obviously, Tiger and Bunny is not quite this. The thing I like really from him is his stuff he's done with Toriyama here and there, when he pulls out a much more cartoony style. So the cast here, we've got Junta is played by Keiichi Namba, who we've covered. He was Clicky in Dirty Pair TV, Anthony. I can't remember what what was he? Was he like the...
Was he a robot or something?
No, I think he was like the... Was he the douchebag? Or was he the pop star? I can't remember. Let me see if I've still got the notes. Or is he the guy who's, is he the guy who's, who wants them to split up the marriage of? I just know he's got a really ridiculous surname as well. I can't remember what it is.
My mind has drawn a big blank. Big blank.
Let me see. I'm sure this will bring it up. Okay. Love is everything. Risk your lives to elope. Yeah, so it's the one where the dad is trying to stop him getting married. Clicky Gold Jeff. What his name was.
Gold Jeff.
Yes.
Like that Johnny Silverhand.
Yeah.
It's called.
Breathtaking.
I'd be Barry Brass.
But
knows.
He's best known, I think, as Andy Bogard from Fatal Fury, King of Fighters, and all that jazz.
Yeah. Nice.
Karin is played by Mina Tominaga, who's probably best known as Noa Izumi from Pat Labor.
Ah, nice.
Tomoko is played by Megumi Hayashibara, who is in everything and will be in the next thing we talk about. And Ryuji Sugishita is played by Takehito Kayaso, who was Yosho in Tenshi, Snufkin in Moomins, and he's also in the next thing we're going to talk about.
I thought his voice sounded familiar, but from none of those things.
That's the thing, it sounded familiar, but I'm like, he couldn't have been... Like, he's such an arsehole in this show.
Well, he's an arsehole in the next show. But...
There you go, he's got range.
But he's a different sort of arsehole in the next show.
Oh, yeah.
Who is he in the next? Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right, okay, yeah. Very different character. Well, an arsehole, but very different voice as well.
Yes. So, Anthony, what was your pick?
It's been a long time coming. Like, we must have more episodes with Saber Marionette J tags in it than
episodes of Saber Marionette J. I don't necessarily tag the things in the quizzes.
No, but it always comes up. And, like, every other quiz it's mentioned. So it's Saber Marionette J.
Okay. Finally. Unfortunately, the doctor on this first episode is giving you a whole lot to answer questions in future quizzes from. So this is part of Hiroshi Nageshi and Satoru Akahori's Saber Marionette Multimedia Project. Saber Marionette J is the second part of the SM Girls story to be animated. Saber Marionette R had been released on OVA in 1995. The project had begun earlier in 1995 with the audio drama SM Girls Saber Marionette R. And the two-letter prefix puts it in a cycle of other Nageshi Akahori projects, such as NG Night Lamoon and 40 and KO Beast Warriors. Nageshi is the guy who did the TV Tenchi Muyo stuff. That universe of Tenchi Muyo. this particular outing aired on TV Tokyo in 1996 for 26 episodes. Oh, the thing I forgot to mention previously, and I will forget to mention it again here, DNA Squared has had two releases in the US. Central Park Media in the early 2000s, and more recently on, let me just find it, so I think you can still buy this version, Eastern Star have got the complete collection of DNA Squared, if that is your fancy. back to Saber Marionette J. So, it aired for 26 episodes in 96. It was produced by HAL Filmmaker, and it follows the adventures of Ataru Mamiya and his three marionette gynoids, Lime, Cherry, and Bloodberry, and what is it?
Spoilers for this first episode! I didn't know you got more than one.
They're in the fucking opening credits.
But that's a blur. There could be anybody.
And what is apparently the only one gay man on a planet of cloned men, Mitsurugi Hanagata.
I did find that hilarious in this episode, but we'll get into it.
They live in a science fiction version of Edo-era Japan called Japoness. Think Akahori's earlier show, Samurai Pizza Cats. In terms of, like, the style of where they live. And this is on the colony planet Terra 2, where the only women are gynoids which lack free will and emotion called marionettes. However, our heroines are mysterious marionettes who break this rule. Eventually, they find themselves in conflict with the dictator of the neighbouring territory, Gartland, which is a pretend science fiction Germany. It was followed by Saber Marionette J again, a six-part OVA in 1997, and Saber Marionette J to X, a sequel TV series in 1998. And there's loads of light novels and other nonsense.
We need Saber Marionette Z!
Yeah, they did that as well.
Back with Dragon Ball Z!
That was one of them. That was a thing. There is one, but it's not an anime.
Oh, is that all right? Okay.
Or if it was planned, I can't remember it exactly.
It's a Mugen game. Lime versus Goku.
I mean, it's there's like a very complicated timeline, and I'm not sure it's ever worth the investment to figure out.
I think it is.
Original air date was Tuesday, October the 1st, 1996. And if you had access to the BBC on this day, you could have watched, Anthony, when you got home from school.
Yeah.
When your mum picked you up, brought you home, you could have watched Brum.
Oh, Brum.
And I did!
See, I've got fond memories of Brum, but not for me. It's because my youngest brother, Jay, when he was growing up, we had VHSs of Brum in the house, and that was one of his first words. You couldn't say the R, so we would used to go, Mum, I want to watch Biam, Biam.
I thought you'd say bum. You couldn't say the R, so it was omitted entirely. Bum.
Bum.
I watched it, but I think I liked the intro better than the show itself, where they kind of like find him, like, or he lets himself out of the garage. I think I liked that better than the show ever delivered. Even as a kid, I was like, oh, I'll just watch the intro. I did watch it.
Yes. Adventures with the Little Car is how it's described. Yeah. Romald the Reindeer. Today, no Romald idea. Is a lifeguard.
Like, it doesn't sound familiar.
It doesn't look familiar either to me at all.
It definitely doesn't.
I have no idea.
Nope.
The all-new Popeye show.
I'm going to say yes, because as a kid, I was a big, big Popeye fan.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it as a kid as well, because it was from 1973 to 1983, so I think that the BBC just repeated it constantly.
Yeah.
Oscar's Orchestra, cartoon adventure about a grand piano with the voice of Dudley Moore.
Oh my god, I remember that!
Oscar's Orchestra.
I remember that! That's...
Oh, that was great! Yeah. That was a great show!
That was a... I didn't know it was Dudley Moore. I've not looked back on it since I was a kid, but yeah, that was a great show.
Music's banned. Futuristic City, music is banned. And yeah, their instruments and stuff, the talk.
A better version of Sonic Underground.
I've never seen this.
I don't ever want to see it again in case it's like really bad, but the premise itself I used to love. Yeah, I didn't know it was called Oscar's Orchestra.
No.
Has it got an alternative title?
Who knows?
It must do. It obviously does, but I feel like it obviously was, but
the alternative title is Dudley Wants a Paycheck.
Then we've got The Queen's Nose.
Now, you must remember yes. This. I was going to say, you must remember this. Was it a 50p or a 20p?
50. I've rubbed many a 50p.
Thank God you went there.
On it, like, I don't know why, it's a satisfying... I really liked
First of a six-part drama, Harmony is given a magic coin.
With this, six parts?
It felt like it was, like, in my memory...
Like 100 episodes. Those,
exactly.
100 episodes.
there was multiple series of it.
Alright, that's good. That's good. I always associate this with Bernard's Watch.
See, I always think... it's part of like this weird like connected universe of like obscure kid shows, because you've got that Burner's Watch. Like, I always think of the Demon Headmaster with it, even though they're years apart. But that sort of show that was on all the time.
Did you ever watch it? Was it Aquila?
The name rings a bell.
Was it called Aquila, where there's like they find a spaceship?
Is that another Australian science fiction kids show?
It might be. You know, it might be.
You know what, kids show
I was trying... That is British, that one is. I did not know. I'm not familiar with this.
I don't know why I have that in the same zone as well.
I know the Queen's Nose from the... It's a Dick King Smith novel, but I don't think I would have ever seen the show. Because, 96... I was still at university, but it was 96. I was really busy at university at this point, so... No time to watch children's TV programs anymore.
There's always time to watch
TV. No, there wasn't. Not when you're doing 12 hours at university every day, as we were on our course. And then you hear about people who just did like 3 hours a week for their final year. It's like, what the fuck? I'm working 12 hours a day during the week and then going in Saturday mornings as well.
Sick, hard work at university.
I know. Disgusting.
Patooey.
I was going to Halo 3 till early hours of the morning.
Yeah. We still had Bomberman.
I'm not laughing because it's such a great game, but it's just like, we still had Bomberman.
Yeah, we still had Bomberman 96. Well, and one group of friends, like two guys, had clubbed together their student loan to buy a PlayStation.
Legends.
And two games. Tomb Raider and Adidas Power Soccer, the game where you can score a goal by just kicking the ball incredibly hard at the goalkeeper that it pushed the goalkeeper over the line. Which is probably what established my love for Inazuma 11, even at that early age.
I was thinking Shaolin Soccer, but yes. Football thing. Oh, man.
Because these special Adidas boots, you see, they're so powerful.
Predators? Were they
Predator boots at that time. Yeah.
Even I didn't play football, but I wanted a pair of Predator boots. I just look at the, in my head, the design was like the coolest thing ever.
And then news round, and then hailing from Anthony's neck of the woods, it's Biker Grove. Angel spends a secret afternoon at a hotel.
I never watched this, you know.
No, I don't know.
You never watched what? I want to hear you say the title.
Biker Grove.
You're cheating.
Biker Grove.
I don't recognize any of these characters.
What, from Biker Grove?
The ones listed here. I used to watch it. Okay. I remember PJ Can't see.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Can't see.
Even as a kid.
It's not hilarious.
I was rolling around.
It was on the news up here and stuff. I'm sure it was.
National hero struck ill.
Weirdly, I felt too young to really enjoy Biker Grove. And then when I was an age that I would like it, I watched a bit of Grange Hill.
Hmm.
And I really liked Grange Hill.
Yeah, see, I've established that I wasn't allowed to watch Grange Hill. But eventually we were, but I think because Biker Grove started, and I think it was exactly the right age, because I'm the same age as Anthony Deck, and somebody I went to university with was best friends with one of the cast members, Spuggy, whoever played Spuggy, she was best friends with.
It's funny you mention that character, because I'm sure they recently did a documentary on Ant McPartlin to do with Biker Grove, and he was on the show. Spuggy.
That was a woman.
No, it's a dude! I'm sure it was. There must be another nickname that's super similar.
I have no horse in this race. I don't know.
Oh, well. What do I know? She was probably on the documentary as well.
She probably was.
She probably was. I just remember a silly name. And just put it together as Spooky.
No, because it's Spooky.
There was the name that was like...
It's like short for Sparrow, because it's like... There. That's what it was short
for. Why was she called Sparrow?
I can't remember. But anyway, I'm establishing that Biker... Yes, but not for that long.
You should know the law.
She was one of the people who didn't do the... Actually, I'm not sure she completed... I'm not sure she came back after the second year, to be honest. Maybe she had to repeat this.
Well, I'd love to know what she's up to.
Anyway, back to BBC. On BBC Two, in the morning, you could watch Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Simon, Theodore!
You missed out the... Okay, fair enough.
Oh, sorry, Neighbours, Toadie suffers public humiliation. Did you want me to mention that as well?
Oh, no, I meant...
Alvin.
Yeah, you missed out Alvin. You just jumped straight to Simon. Who's Alvin? Chop liver?
But he said Alvin and the Chipmunks. I was like, Simon, Theodore. And I've noticed, you know what? I'm gonna shame Marv here. He's called me Ant because he's scared to say Anthony in case he says it wrong.
Whereas
I'm right on.
I've said it wrong for years and I don't care.
But I'm going to start saying your name's wrong, Brianne.
That's not the way that name's pronounced anywhere. Whereas your name, where I come from, who wouldn't get the H pronounced.
Yeah,
the H is there,
but I've known so many Antonys that spell it with an H, and are called Anthony. I've only met one other guy who calls himself, who is called Anthony.
Calls himself.
Yes, I know. Respect our dialects, Anthony.
But I would, and
you're like, I would, but it's wrong.
I would, but it's wrong. Anyway, Alvin, Simon, Theodore, they're the chipmunks.
Do. Yeah.
Then there was a repeater, Blue Peter, Fireman Sam, and Lassie.
Whoa.
He's like, you don't just present.
Yeah, I've got to do the. Remember the Blue Peter tune?
Yes.
Fantastic intro. That board comes sailing in.
It doesn't tell us. All it tells us is the show yesterday at 5:10 PM.
I'm thinking Connie Hook days.
What was the dog's name? The famous one that lived the longest and then they had...
No, they all died at one point, Marv.
I know, but there was one, like, from this timeline, this generation, that lasted for ages, and then everyone... I remember everyone being sad later in the 90s when it finally went...
It's probably named after a food. Is it like custard or apricot or something like that?
Maybe lime, maybe bloodberry, you never know.
Well, yeah. You got bad news, Anthony. Because I can't tell you what era it is, because it was a special which only had Katie Hill as the presenter.
I didn't really gel with her.
You'll have to go on Wikipedia and find out for yourself who was presenting her.
A bit of homework for you.
Yes. Fireman Sam and Lassie. This is Fireman Sam back when it was puppets and not terrible, terrible CG. And... I assume still just like repeats of incredibly odd Lassie episodes.
I don't think I ever watched Fireman Sam.
At 6 o'clock on BBC Two, you can watch Heartbreak High.
No idea what that is.
I know what it is. I didn't like it.
It's like based on like a young adult novels again? It was like it's like a teenage soap opera type thing. I think it was.
I was going to say in my mind, it kind of reminded me of like, a slightly more serious take on the Sweet Valley High and
that's
the California
thinking
Dreams
of,
type
is,
shows.
Whereas this isn't that at all. I think Sweet Valley High is based on books. This is an Australian high school.
Well, the teacher looks like Kevin Keegan. If you go to the images of the show, there's a teacher looks like Kevin Keegan. But I would not have watched it. Why would I? Like, there was Saved by the Bell. This is like
this is a nerd
Saved by the Bell.
Yes. Apparently dealt with a tough high school in the multiracial area of Sydney and proved to be a more gritty and fast-paced show than many of its contemporaries.
Oh my god. This looks like one of those post-apocalyptic Netflix shows.
Yeah, so I think I had in my head an entirely different version of the show than what it was and had never seen it because of... I wouldn't have watched it anyway, knowing what it was. But...
Oh, this intro is so 90s.
The logo is so 90s.
Everything about it is.
Yeah.
But no, I definitely wasn't watching that.
Yep. Okay, UK number one was Deep Blue Something with Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Great tune.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-da-bum.
What?
That's the tune.
Isn't it isn't it the, and I said, what about breakfast at Tiffany's?
That's what I just did.
Oh, I see. But it's the strangest way of, like, if you'd have hummed it, it would have made it, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. That sounds nothing like it.
Just a different key, that's all.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh,
it's just a silent H, that's all.
How do you disconnect the Discord call?
So, episode one, Enter Lime, the Planet of Men. We are directed here by Masami Shimoda, who would go on to do Ayori Ashoe, Boys B, Ease Otherwise, and Zegapain. And the screenplay is by Miyori Sekijima, who was a writer on Samurai Pizza Cats, and would also write Zegapain. Masami Shimoda also was the storyboard and episode director The anime character design is by Shuichi Shimomura, whose most notable things are Honey and Clover and Nodami Cantable. Most notable because they look nothing like this, and if you were to tell me the same people designed them, I would have called you a liar. But the original character design is Tsukasa Kotobuki, best known for designing characters for Toshinden. And
the game!
The game! Battle Arena Toshinden.
Yeah.
And would you look at that?
Creator of Cyber Team in Akihabara. And I think he's like a Masami Obari disciple, and also was like an assistant for Kenichi Sonoda on Gunsmith Cats.
Oh, one of my favourite shows of all time.
He worked on the Masami Obari opening on the recent Pop Team Epic special.
I've got to say, my favourite word right now is cantabile. What does that mean?
I may be pronouncing that wrong.
I think you would pronounce it perfect.
Spelling it wrong as well. No, that's right.
Nodami cantabile. That's such a good word.
Cantabile. It's an Italian word which means singable or song-like, according to Google.
Cool.
It's a show about musicians. You probably would really like it, Anthony.
I probably would. And I liked Honey and Clover as well, what we watched. Yes. So...
it's in the similar vein.
Yeah, I like maybe some music stuff like this. I don't know why. It just warms the heart, warms the soul with the cantabile.
You've pronounced it perfectly. I've just put it in dictionary.com and it's cantabile, apparently.
And here he is questioning my pronunciation.
I'm interested. I'm intrigued.
You're Italian, but not...
No, I'm saying Anthony questioning my...
Anthony. Anyway. Let's move on. Right. So, Baby Marionette, am I ready? He's ready for it.
Yeah, fire away.
Right. Okay. Huge ship. Opens up with a huge ship. There's an accident. Everyone's panicking. We've got to get to safety. Yada, yada, yada. Ship crash lands on an unknown planet, presumably. And they're all looking out into the desert. And it's all a sepia brown tone. Is sepia or sepia?
Sepia, I think.
Sepia tone. And then we get the text 300 years later. And we're introduced to a place called Japanese, which, as Brian's mentioned, it's basically a historic Japanese, not sure what era, like, or period it's meant to be. But even though it's historic, they've got some advanced bits of technology going around, such as cars, and we'll get to the marionettes. Anyway, we get introduced to the lead character called Ataru. He's a hard-working young lad who's off to get some fish. I don't know whether he's intending to sell the fish or whatever else, but he's a hard-working lad.
He's selling it. He's always screaming, my wares, my wares.
My wares, of course. Did you watch the dub or the Japanese?
Unfortunately, it was the dub, yeah.
Japanese for me.
I started with the dub, and I was like, I think I'll watch the sub. Not for any reason other than I thought I'd give it a shot.
The dub wasn't too bad as dubs go, but...
Yeah, the Japanese seemed fine, so... Mm. And you got to have Ryuji, didn't we? As he'll show up later. So, anyway, Ataru is then introduced to this old man, and he's showing off this new marionette he's been getting called Gemini. And he's been, I want to say, overly weird with it, saying, yeah, it can do your jobs and all that stuff, but also... If you lean on its, sleep on its thigh, it's like sleeping on a cloud. And it's also got an inbuilt ear cleaner. And then it cuts to him getting his ears cleaned, which I guess is quite a nice sensation.
Oh, we also get a bit, they're teasing Ataru by, look at him, he loves marionettes.
Which confused me to no end while I'm watching it. I'm like, on a planet where there's nothing but men, or robotic women, you're getting teased for being aroused by the robotic women. Okay.
Which in my impression, every other man was gathered around.
No,
like,
I think they're getting excited as having a servant. Is what they're excited about.
So they're down on him because you think these are people.
Yes.
You think they have rights.
That's pretty much it, yes.
Oh God. Re-released in 2019.
Anyway, we see our first bit of, well, I want to say not first bit of advanced technology, because I think a marionette is more advanced than a motor palanquin?
Yes.
Is that the proper word for it?
I think so, yes.
I think it's a great word as well. Not as good as contable, but anyway, you see this car kind of speeding down the street and they kind of preface it with that. Oh, that's, I think it's Josharu or someone's son. And, the car pulls up and it's this kid called Hanagata, which instantly made, this is going to be terrible for listeners, but we've known somebody who's gone to cons called Hanagata. That was his online presence. And I never really knew what it was. I never cared to ask. I just thought it was a name that he came up with. So when this character was introduced, I was like, oh, okay. So that's where it came from.
I nearly leapt out of my chair. I was like, oh my God. Context.
Good point. Anyway, he's ribbing Ataru for like, what are you doing working? You haven't even got a marionette. So I was getting big like Pokemon vibes with, you know, you haven't even got a Pokemon.
He hasn't even chosen a starter.
Yeah. And they end up, Ataru's like, oh, well, let's take this outside. And that's a little gag where they're already stood outside in the street. Anyway, they end up on this bridge. All of Hanagata's goons attack Ataru. And in all fairness, Ataru's a pretty good fighter.
Mm.
Like, he's fighting against, like, big men.
It reminded me of the Ninja Scroll scene on the bridge.
Oh, yes. Oh, if only. If only.
The one thing that sticks out about that scene, though, is that Ataru shouts to him, I'll sprinkle salt on your ass and eat it.
I tweet that as well. Yeah, that's the thing. He says, yeah, and I was like, whoa.
Just out of left field, completely unprovoked.
From there, Ataru gets knocked off the bridge. I think like the big dude kind of breaks the bridge and he falls through. I can't remember too clearly that moment, but you then see presumably a marionette, who is a spy, getting watched by another marionette, and she says, oh, that's a spy, or they're spying or something, and they're kind of going across the rooftop, scurrying around, and then it cuts back to Ataru, who, he wakes up, on like the shore, he's gone down river, and he's at the Japanese Pioneer Museum, and it sets the story, and it's got this like voiceover in the background as he enters the museum, which explained that only 6 males survived that dreadful accident at the start. And, you know, 6 men, and that's why there's no real, women around. Thus the marionettes. Anyway, he approaches a painting on what's called the memory of the human female. It's like this lady, I think she's holding a rose or something like that. And as he's looking at it, the floor, trapdoor opens along the floor, he falls through it, and he's in this secret lab, and there's this huge kind of human contained pod on the ground, and Ataru thinks, oh, it's a marionette. And I thought the twist was it was going to be a real lady, but it is just a marionette. So they could have done so much with everybody in the town thinking she was just a marionette, but it's actually a real person, but no, it's just a marionette, which is fine.
But you see, what I got from, because I love that scene, and that's what made me, like, spoilers, think that I might have watched it further, is that, you know, when she wakes up, uh-huh, it reminded me of Ryoko and Tenchi in the cave. But she wakes up, and she's got, like, her own personality, and she's talking to him, you know, like a normal woman would talk. And then all of a sudden, the HAL 9000 erases her mind and puts Lime's personality in her. And I'm like, well, this is going to go somewhere later down the line. Like, they've just completely rewritten her personality in the first episode. So we're going to have to find out who she really is.
So she's perhaps been designed by someone. And I mean, at this point, maybe I'm overthinking this as well, but you don't know who Ataru's parents are or anything like that. So maybe there's something else going on where the trapdoor detected him.
Yeah, oh, that's true. That's true.
I didn't think of that. Yeah, see? anyway, after awakening, she touches him, and I think she says she loves you. I love you. But she does say it again later on. Anyway, she introduces herself as Lime, and he takes her back to the town to buy her some clothes. which at this point, I mean, I realized this in the intro as well. I was like, now I know what Saber Marionette J is because I recognize her as a character from people in cosplay, perhaps artwork online. Whereas before that, this show was a blur. And that's why when it opens in that kind of science fiction setting at the start with the ship and like the disaster, I was like, oh, this isn't the show I thought it was. And so it was all very confusing at the beginning. So, but we're on the right track now anyway. So he goes into town, buys her these clothes, which as I say, I've seen before. They promptly get ruined by Hanagai, who's kind of speeding through the town, looking around for Ataru. Which, I mean, I don't know what his plan is when he gets him. But anyway, he drives through this filthy puddle, splashes her, ruins her clothes, and she's furious. And she chases after the car, and he's like, I'm going to speed off. I won't have a marionette beating this car. And he says, I don't know, something 5,000 or other. Mm. And she just speeds past. Even when it's going at the fastest, she speeds past, and she turns around and stops it by just plonking her foot on the car. You know, that kind of thing. Then we cut to the two spies, the two spies at this point. One of them is essentially wearing the same hood thing as Karen was in DNA Squared.
Yeah.
That's definitely a thing. And from there, another marionette shows up. They're like, oh, you're a spy for, I guess it's going to be the Garland. I can't remember what they say, but from Brian's synopsis, she may be spying for them.
You're a spy from not Germany.
Not Germany.
Why have you invaded not Japan?
That's right. And they fight, the entire, like, this building starts collapsing, and the building's about to crush Ataru and Hanagata, and Lime uses her abilities, the psychic ability, or whatever it is, to hold the building in place, kind of pull them out to safety, and then just chucks the building on Hanagata anyway. So, yeah. She then overheats or kind of runs out of juice. It's like she lets off all this steam out of, like, these flaps open up and stuff and lets out all this steam. And she just stood motionless, and he carries her home, and she's like kind of snoozing on his back, and she repeats, I love you, or something to that effect. And that's the end of the episode. And I've got to say, I was up and down with it. At points, I thought, would I watch this as a kid? I don't know whether I would. And then I was thinking, actually, I would. And I don't know whether I would have liked it more now or then, or just both. I think I'm pleasantly surprised with this, how this turned out. Personally, I don't like Hanagata as a villain, but I don't suppose he's necessarily a villain when we've got these other spy marionettes and stuff showing up, so he's more of like the comedic presence of an antagonist, but I think he's pretty dull, to be honest. Too over the top. What did you two think?
I was very decided on it. Like, apart from being unsure with the intro, with the flashback, as soon as you get to Japanese and you get that setting, I was all in. And like, the characters I really liked. And what I really like is that you have this, like, wonderful comedic, like, main through line going on. And then every time it cuts back to the spies, you've got, like, again, this ninja scroll action with, like, these shoulder implanted Gatling guns and then, like, two ninja marionettes and this crazy action going on. And you're like, I can see how these two branches will flower off. And, you know, you'll get more of the, like, harem, hilarity with the hit with Ataru's marionettes, and then you've got all this political intrigue with the Six Nations and all that stuff. So I definitely think I would have watched it then and enjoyed it, and I would probably watch it now, I think, as well. I think of the three episodes that we watched, this was my favorite.
Weirdly, you mentioned the politics side. Usually I'm like, oh, I need a bit more of a good story to drag us through, but I was quite enjoying the fun of this.
Yeah.
I think it felt the most genuinely fun. I know the first thing we watched was quite fun, but it was lacking. So was DNA Squared. But yeah, I agree. Brian, were you...
Well, I'm in a different boat than you guys, in that I've seen all of this.
He's a huge fan!
I've bought all of this, and then had buyer's remorse by the time I'd finished watching it.
Oh, you can't get buyer's remorse when you're finished.
You can't, because you don't know what it's about until you've finished watching it.
Yeah,
you don't know how dodgy its sexual politics are going to get by the time you finish watching it.
Sexual politics?
Yeah.
Ooh.
you've not met Cherry yet. And
oh, I'm going to Google Cherry.
I'm going to say...
Don't.
no, you won't get anything from her character design. It's... Yeah, she's a deeply irritating character. And I think
you know the kind of characters that annoy me. Like, there's characters you like that annoy me. So if you don't like this character because she's annoying, woo!
I think one of my least favourite Akahori-related things. And I like a decent amount of his stuff, and I would, but a decent amount of his stuff is pretty trashy and also has terrible sexual politics. And gender politics and all sorts of things. I mean, the recurring thing of the group that they're going to be here, of like, and there's kind of like one more girl than there normally is, and one less other man than there normally is. But there is normally like this, the hero, there'll be quite often two sisters fighting over that guy, and there'll be a gay guy, and then there'll be somebody else filling up the fifth slot. Weirdly, if you think about it, is kind of like, I feel like Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya kind of takes like the formula a little bit of what Akahori was. It's not just Akahori's formula, it's, God, I can't remember the guy's name. It's like a guy, the Dragon Ball writer, like had a crew of people he trained up in 1988, and then they wrote most of the anime during the 90s.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's the formula of, like, the thing of, which is taken from Dragon Ball, of, like, having a formula to name. So you've got the three girls here are all named after fruit.
Yeah, yeah, I did sort of think that with the whole named after food thing. But I thought it might have just been a coincidence. I didn't realize it was this incestuous bloodline of, yes, of manga writers.
Yes. well, anime writers, at least. They stole from Dragon Ball. I think I'll probably just say, well, Dragon Ball's a massive success, so we should do the things Dragon Ball does. I can't remember exactly why I went off it towards the end. And if you don't like it, I don't want to say what I think it is, because you may be fine with it. Also, I gave it too many episodes. It's only 25 for this series. It's 26 for the later series.
No wonder you had buyer's remorse. You were expecting another episode.
I know.
I've got to say, Bloodberry looks great. Not because she's got a huge chest, but like she looks like a badass. She looks so cool. That's not. She just looks like such a badass on all the art I'm seeing. Like she's presumably this. Like fist fighting type.
Yeah.
Is she good?
Yeah, I mean, she's preferable to Cherry and probably preferable to Lime as well, because it's weird, like Lime having this childlike personality. I think eventually becomes a little creepy.
Making it weird.
But yeah, no, not my favourite. But I think there's bits which give me nostalgia, because there's like bits in this which were in the very first AMV I ever saw.
Okay.
So I still get pangs of nostalgia more for that AMV than... And the animation's not too bad. The end credits are terrible. They just...
But it's a cool image, though.
they're drawings.
Not just like animated.
Apparently just somebody's photos that they've recently had developed. Random pictures of cats. not like taken from the negatives either. They just appear to be the scans of the actual photos because they're all like slightly sun faded. It's a weird choice. But yeah, I still get bits of nostalgia like for the tinkling thing of the logo.
I don't even recall what that did.
It's like the rudimentary CG logo thing that it does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. but I know I can't fully enjoy this episode knowing that I went off it later.
Yeah, yeah. Would you have watched this as a kid?
Yeah, probably, because I watched Samurai Pizza Cats, and this would have reminded me of Samurai Pizza Cats, but with less jokes.
I've never watched that. I'm sure I've never watched it, you know.
Well,
Samurai Pizza Cats, that is. But it's funny, because people bring it up, and I, like, do that thing where it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that show, because I think, Jesus, I cannot admit to not having seen this show. It's the only thing I do with.
Late 80s, so.
But I don't, like, everybody else seems to know about it, and I don't. I don't know why.
Well, maybe someone will pick it who also didn't see it and who were the appropriate age.
See,
I can't pick it because it's a little after when
can
I was
Can I pick
two.
It?
No, you can't.
Oh.
It's on American Crunchyroll and so is the Japanese version, which are distinctly different. There's... Watching the dub, I used to like Samurai Pizza Cats when it was on, I want to say, Motormouth. Some Andy Crane presented ITV Saturday morning. Kids thread, at least. But watching it today, it's that sort of American writing where, and production where it feels like they can't allow there to be a moment of silence at any point during the show.
Oh, God. The random grunts and gasps.
So people just constantly talking, and when there's not talking, just incredibly loud music and sound effects. But I had fond memories of the time. I'd made compilation tapes of it when it was being repeated on, like, Central during summer holidays and things. I was like, okay, right, it's on. Let's get the tape out. Record another episode. Fill up a VHS full of Samurai Pizza Cats. I probably would have enjoyed this, and I probably wouldn't have noticed all the dodgy stuff as it went along.
Yeah, oh, definitely as a kid, you're not looking out for that. Even if you're not looking out for it, you'd notice it now as an adult, but...
No, it's just subliminally creating your fetishes as you go along.
I think I picked the winner, though.
I think I prefer Kuwangumi.
Oh, no. I think that's the worst of the bunch. I was even pleasantly surprised with DNA Square.
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting that to be worse than it was, but I still... Kuwangumi's more my sort of thing. Where's more... It makes sense that I'm going to like it more, because it is from me. It was aimed at people my age at that time.
Literally, watching that episode of Kuwangumi, I was like, this is definitely a Brian pick.
Oh, it's one of, not the most Brian show, but yeah.
It's
mine
pretty nice.
At least was kind of at random-ish, even though I've always wanted to watch it.
A Shonen Jump gag show is probably getting close to being the most Brian pick that you can have.
Especially if it was short, 3-minute short.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like I said, that was how I improved it, wasn't it? I said if it was
I would have agreed. If this was 10 minutes long...
Oh, yeah, I'd have enjoyed it,
more. Solid, you know, gag to gag. Because even the ones that aren't great, you don't have time to think about it because you're getting another one. That's the winning formula.
Well, there you go. That is another episode of the anime that didn't make us all wrapped up. Marv, can people find you doing things on the internet? Or do you want to keep it all secret?
They can find me on the internet. The best place would probably just be my Instagram, MarvLafayette84. I am on Twitter as well, but I don't use it very often.
See, I've got to make the... Well, do I want to make the change? I haven't got an Instagram account, but obviously they're eventually going to merge Facebook Messenger into that and WhatsApp, aren't they? So maybe I'll just wait for that to happen before I move to Instagram. Whereas you can find me on Twitter at @awesome_engine, and you too can retweet and like that Evangelion viewing order joke that I made for probably entirely different reasons than I made the joke for. And bloody hell, it's not quite up to that Golden Kamuy tweet yet, but it's about halfway there.
No, that's your winner so far.
It
isn't
is my it? Winner, yeah.
The bear one.
Anthony, where can people find you on the internet?
Twitter's a good place, but an even better place is had to think there. I'm a bit tired. It's Twitch. If you go to twitch.tv/AntAskie, I'm currently playing Breath of the Wild, which just addicted to be honest.
Okay. Well, you can follow me on Twitch as well, because I did briefly go on, I did do some streaming the other day, so who knows?
If you follow me on... say?
Well, you didn't, obviously weren't paying attention on Twitter.
But what did you stream?
I was doing it at the weekend, because I was testing, like, the upload speeds on my, I wanted to see.
Ah.
For future plans.
Did it work fine?
Yeah, it worked very fine. But yes, let's go, Brian.
I'm searching for you right now. It's not finding you at all. Let's go. That's weird.
Well, just go and look at your followers and I'll be one of your followers.
I've got you. Dragon's Dogma. Let's follow this boy. There you go.
There you go. I've got, I have three followers. I've got Lewis and Sonny.
Oh, no, you've got two. Oh, no, you're three. Yeah. Hitman Horror. And, Lewis and me.
So if you want to hit see me, not say anything to you because no one's there, and watch me go, oh no, I've made a terrible mistake. It's a long time since I played I don't play Dragon Dogma since it first came out, and I'm playing it on the PS4. And I'm now backing off my suggestion that you should play Anthony, because there's some gameplay mechanics which have not aged well. Like, I've got to press, a button every time you open a door.
Is that it?
That's the thing which has mostly annoyed me playing it.
When you say a button, is it like an active time event button where it slams out a button at random?
To open a door, you got to press square or circle or something. And I'm like, I'm just used to doors opening for me when I walk through them. Because they're not like there's a
I think that's a mechanic I'd be fine with.
Actually, you might be, because you play games which I would find far more frustrating.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, you put that many hours into Forbidden Siren, while constantly complaining about playing Forbidden Siren. I'm sure you'd manage Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah.
But now there's like, these job boards, and I was just blindly taking all the jobs, and I'd forgotten about these escort jobs, where as soon as you take one, it starts, and you've now got to escort that guy or girl to wherever they want to go. And it was to a part of the map where I am nowhere near the right level to go to yet. And also, I have no way of fast travelling there. So I had to spend an hour walking this guy all the way across the map while hiding from dragons and other fierce monsters. Absolute nightmare. So if you like that as somehow entertaining, you may see that at some point over the weekend. Or I might play something else. I've got other things to play. I've got the Spider-Man now.
Oh.
Great game.
Or maybe, which would probably be a much better thing.
Red Dead?
Me and Dwayne playing Red Dead would probably be a much more sensible thing to do.
Oh, you have to be on this chat together?
Yeah, we would. Yeah, that would be the thing. I'm hearing some noises from somebody.
Yeah, it ain't me.
Forgive me, I just opened Twitch to follow you on there.
Righty-ho! That is that. We will be back next week with the season preview. Unless I've got my dates wrong, in which case the season preview came out before this date. Goodbye!
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.